5. East of the Harchong Narrows, Gulf of Dolar. Gwilym Mawr Thiar wasn't surprised by his fatigue. After the last 3 days, he would have been astounded if his knees hadn't felt just a bit too limber and his eyes hadn't ached. He stretched and yawned as he looked around Dancer's quarterdeck in the morning light. His flagship had come through the tempest more or less intact, but she hadn't gotten off unscathed. Despite his having sent down the royals and topgallants, she'd lost her main and mizzen topmasts when a rogue wave rolled her almost onto her beam ends. She'd recovered, something he wouldn't have been prepared to bet on at the moment, and the violent roll as she came back the other direction had whipped the topmasts out of her. The good news was that the wind had continued backing. By now, it was out of the south-southeast, far enough abaft the bow for Dancer to hold a westerly heading once again, close-hauled on the port tack under her main and mizzen courses and her fore topsail. It was an awkward, ill-balanced spread of canvas, but it was the best Captain McGale could manage until he could sway up replacement masts and spars. Unfortunately, the main and mizzen topgallants and royal masts had been lashed to the since-vanished topmasts when they were brought down and housed. They'd gone over the side with the lower masts, which meant they had to be replaced as well. Not only would that require extra time, but Dancer didn't have that many replacement spars on board. Whatever they could cobble up was going to be jury-rigged at best, at least until Captain McGale could get her back to Claw Island and do a proper job.
"Looks like some of those coasters full of naval stores you sent back to Claw Island will come in handy after all," he thought with a certain relish.
The notion of using the Royal Dolaran Navy's own spars to repair his damages appealed to him strongly. And it was as well he had them, he reflected, his smile fading, because Dancer wasn't the only galleon who'd suffered damage aloft. Not surprisingly, the storm had scattered his ships. Only 6 of them were in sight at the moment, including Dancer, and 4 had lost spars, sails, or masts of their own. In fact, HMS Rockpoint had lost her entire foremast, and her decks were a swarm of activity as her captain prepared to step a replacement. From Dancer's quarterdeck, it looked as if he was using a spare mainyard, which would probably serve well enough until they could get a proper mast set up back at Hardship Bay. The true miracle, as far as Mawr Thiar was concerned, was that HMS Messenger, the smallest of the schooners attached to the squadron, had not only survived the storm intact, but had actually located the flagship afterward. Just how Lieutenant Commander Grazale had managed both those feats was more than the Admiral was prepared to guess at this point, but it certainly confirmed his already high opinion of Grazale's seamanship.
"That young man's in line for bigger and better things," Mawr Thiar thought.
Then his lips twitched.
"Of course, giving up something as lively as Messenger in return for a great lumbering galleon may not strike him as a better thing, at least at first. I'm sure he'll get over it, though."
At the moment, Messenger was well to the east, keeping a wary eye on the horizon. Mawr Thiar still wasn't certain exactly how deep into the Gulf of Dolar they'd been driven, but his best guess put him just east of the Harchong Narrows, the roughly 450-mile stretch between Steen's Cape Samuel to the north and the northern coast of Kuznetsov to the south. That would put him the better part of 1,200 miles from Claw Island, which, combined with his ship's damaged rigging, was going to make getting back to the island a slow, dragging, unmitigated pain in the arse. At the same time, he didn't really expect the entire Dolaran Navy to come sailing right at him. As severely as the storm had handled his own experienced, well-trained, well-found ships, he hated to think what it would have done to a less experienced fleet. If the Earl of Thirsk and his galleons had gotten in the way of that storm, they'd be lucky if they hadn't lost entire ships, far less the occasional mast or spar. He stepped back out of the way as Lieutenant Yeerman Seasmoke, Dancer's first lieutenant, and her bosun prepared to send the replacement mizzen topmast aloft. Miguel was actually using a replacement fore topmast, which was a bit longer than the mizzen topmast it was replacing, but approximately the same diameter, which would allow it to fit through the hole in the lower mast cap once it was set up. The broken stub of the original topmast had been lowered to the deck, and the gears, the top rope, and the top block attached to the underside of the cap were already in place. Now the men on the hauling end of the top rope took the strain, and the replacement spar began inching upward, supported by the rope rove through the sheave in its heel. It was longer than the lower mast's height above deck, so it had been necessary to take the heel of the new topmast forward, lowering it through the removed spar deck gratings to get sufficient clearance for it to be started up. But Seasmoke and the bosun had things well in hand, and Manthir watched the evolution with satisfaction.
"Excuse me, sir."
Manthir turned toward the politely raised voice and smiled at Lieutenant Rosman. The auburn-haired young Chisomian looked as tired as Manthir felt.
"Niklos, requested that I inform you your breakfast is ready. I believe he's a bit provoked at not being able to offer you fresh eggs this morning."
Rosman's expression was admirably grave, but the corners of his lips twitched, and Manthir snorted. Both the chicken coop and the wyvern coop — wyverns and chickens couldn't be confined together because the former had a tendency to eat the latter — had been washed overboard during the storm. Manthir was grateful it hadn't been far worse, but Niklos Valain clearly took it as a personal affront that the first hot meal he'd been able to offer his admiral in 4 days was going to be less than perfect.
"I'm sure he is. A bit provoked, I mean," the admiral said, "which probably means I shouldn't keep him waiting. I assume you'll join me, Donald?"
"Thank you, sir. I will."
"Then let's you and I go beard the dragon in his lair."